This episode of the Slow Melt Maker Series is sponsored by Cacao Cucina, the control you need to craft your chocolate. Reliable chocolate making machinery built in the USA. Use Slow Melt 10 at cacaocucina.com. Contact us for a 10% discount through September 1st. This episode is also supported by Chocolate Alchemy, supplier of the largest selection of fine flavor cocoa beans, chocolate making equipment, and volumes of free chocolate making information. They've been helping home chocolate makers and bean-to-bar professionals for over 14 years. Visit chocolatealchemy.com and enter SLOWMELT at checkout to receive 10% off any retail cocoa bean order.
Welcome to the Slow Melt Maker Series. I'm Simran Sethi, and today I'm speaking with Sarah Tibbetts, based in Chicago in the United States, who's one of L'Ecole Valrhona's three North American pastry chefs for Valrhona, based in Thon-l'Hermitage, France. Sarah, thanks so much for chatting.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
I want to start at the very beginning. Can you share one of your earliest memories of tasting chocolate?
Absolutely. I think every child is really obsessed with sweets and candy, but chocolate always held a very special place with me. And my parents and my grandparents were very big into food. So that led me to become a pastry chef. And as I was working through the years, I started to get more and more in with chocolate. And obviously, that led me to where I am today, working with Valrhona.
How did you connect to Valrhona?
I started using them very early in my career, and I worked with some amazing chefs that were very strong advocates of Valrhona. And I kept seeing this throughout all these pastry chefs and Michelin-starred restaurants, that they had this strong desire to use Valrhona. So it kept with me, and when I became a pastry chef running my own kitchens, it was the first thing I went to. And I realized why they kept using it. Its consistency, it's amazing product, it has this just intense flavor profile. So that led me to be a Valrhona supporter myself and eventually started working with them and for them.
So when you're talking about using Valrhona as a pastry chef, are you talking about using couverture?
Correct, yes. So couverture is essentially chocolate that has an added amount of cocoa butter to it so that it's consistent and makes it easier for the pastry chef to use. So that every time they open a bag or a box or anything of chocolate, if it's a couverture, they know exactly that it's going to work the same way every single time.
What's interesting when we think about the idea of consistency is you're working with an agricultural product, right? So there are different origins that have different flavor profiles.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
How, as a pastry chef, how do you account for that, that slight bit of variance in the fact that from harvest to harvest, there's going to be a little bit of difference? Or is it really the way Valrhona works to create blends that are going to deliver that consistency time after time?
That's an interesting point. So Valrhona started making one of our very well-known chocolates, Guanaja, 31 years ago. It's our 70% chocolate. It was the first chocolate that they put a percentage on. To this day, that recipe is exactly the same. And we're very strong with that consistency because it's important. As a pastry chef, you can't have those little changes every time. You need to have the same flavor profile, the same workability. So it's really important. Now, if you're tasting a bar of chocolate, that's totally different. But when you're working with it in a pastry application, it's really important to have the same product every single time.
So let's talk a little bit about the history of Valrhona. How exactly did it come into being?
Well, Valrhona was started in 1922 by a pastry chef for pastry chefs. And we're based out of the south of France in Thon-l'Hermitage. And the factory and our now school, which was created in 1989, is based in the Rhone River Valley. So that's where the name comes from, Valrhona, Valley of the Rhone. So we really have a deep history in the south of France, and it's really an amazing area with a lot of other fruit producers and the lush culture of food and wine.
One of the things that I think is so interesting is Valrhona crosses a couple of different markets. So how does the company define? Is Valrhona a specialty chocolate maker? Is it craft? Is it mid-sized?
That's a great question. A lot of people think Valrhona is much larger than we are. And we're really a small company. We really have small roots in that south of France. We have 600 employees. We have 30 chefs worldwide. We have 4 schools. But we only account for less than 1% of the total chocolate production for the world. We have 2 main factories based in Tannes-la-Hermitage. One is the original smaller site with a lot of the original equipment still in use. Then we have a larger, newer site where we're doing now, keeping up with the bulk of our production because we've grown extensively, obviously, since 1922. So what we're doing is something that's very different. We're making a chocolate that has this real bean-to-bar background, the original bean-to-bar, if you will, because we're able to work with our growers to be on the plantations where a lot of the larger companies can't do that. So what we've done is we've made a commitment to work with these people specifically, and the end results show that.
From where exactly in the world are you sourcing cocoa beans?
So we are looking into 18 different origins at this point. And we're trying to look into different areas and see if they can give us a really interesting finished product. The beans are a lot like wine. So it depends on the terroir. Where it grows makes a significant difference in the flavor profile and the finished product.
And when you talk about looking for specific flavor profiles, what would you say is the defining characteristic of what you're looking for?
So we really let the beans determine the end result flavor. A bean from the Dominican Republic is going to taste significantly different than a bean from Madagascar. First and foremost, they do a lot of tests with the beans, small batches, to see what percentage works best, what flavor profiles come through in the finished bar from these beans. So they let the bean determine the end flavor, which is really, really important. They don't go out and say, we're going to get beans from this region and it's going to be this percentage. What they do is they say, we would like to look at beans here. They're working really well. We like the production. We like the plantation that we found. Now, what can we do with this? What type of chocolate can we produce from these beans?
Is there anything that you wish chocolate consumers better understood about this process of sourcing or making chocolate?
I think we're at this age right now where people are very interested in food, which is fantastic. But they need to understand that there's a lot of local producers, and chocolate will never be local, just like coffee will never be local, because it's always going to come from that chocolate belt. So that being said, you have to look at the end results and who is producing the best product. And it's awesome to support local, and I think it's really interesting, you know, that there are a lot of bean-to-bar growers now, but they're not producing something that's necessarily the quality and the consistency that the larger companies can produce.
This episode is brought to you by Rotar Chocolate Machines, a chocolate grinder designed and built by a chocolate maker for chocolate makers and made in the United States. Get all of the details at www.rotar.com. This episode is also brought to you by Blue Apron, the meal delivery service that works directly with artisanal purveyors and family-run farms to bring meals to your door. Get $30 off your first order plus free shipping at blueapron.com/chocolate.
Can you talk a little bit about the kind of story Valrhona is sharing through their packaging?
So about 3 years ago, we totally redid the retail line, and there's a couple really outstanding factors about it. One being the gold cocoa leaf flower emblem at the top. That is our logo, but to make it gold really stands out, really brings a different luxury effect to the packaging. You have the percentage of the chocolate in bold. For consumers, this is important because They might want something in the 60 range, they want something in the 70 range, or they might want a bar with inclusions. It's important for them to have that number, even though that's really just a guideline for the flavor of the bar.
So let's talk a little bit more about that. What does that 64% tell a chocolate eater?
Really, that percentage just tells you the chocolate part of it and cocoa butter, anything that occurs naturally and anything that's added. So that's the 64%. Past that, you have other additives, which could be sugar. If we're talking about a milk chocolate, you're going to have milk powder. So really, the percentage is going to give you the amount of cocoa butter and cocoa fiber in that particular chocolate. But that can vary from company to company. That can vary within the same brand. So for example, a 64% from Madagascar is going to taste very different than a 64% from the Dominican Republic, just based on where the beans are from.
And we are going to taste your 64% from Madagascar, the Noir Manjari, together now. I'd love for you to tell me a little bit about this origin as I'm opening it up.
So this is actually one chocolate that has been a very well known with pastry chefs for many years. We created this in 1990, and the idea was going for that pure Madagascar, that single origin, trying to get that really intense flavor profile that was specific to the beans. So the first thing you'll know when you see and feel when you taste this bar is that it is very, very acidic. Red fruit notes.
Good acidic.
Yes. No, good acidic. And it when I taste it, I taste raspberries. That's all there is to it.
I've got it in my mouth now. You taste raspberries. I'm going to see what I taste. It's interesting. It's gold foil. And when you open it up, the portion sizes are a little bit different. The way that they're scored, you're going to break off a big piece or a smaller piece. Was that an intentional decision to give people a little bit more, I don't know, leeway? And I mean, some of these pieces are gigantic, which is kind of wonderful.
Depends on your mood.
Yeah.
Do you need a bigger piece when it's a bad day and a smaller piece when it's a good day? No, yes, it's a very specific mold, and it really sets us apart. When you open certain bars of chocolate, they just look normal. You have very distinct squares or cubes of chocolate. And what we wanted to do was really stand out. And the mold is very unique. Ideally, you're going to take whatever piece, whatever size you want, and hopefully you're going to share the bar with someone else. But the pieces themselves, they are a little bit different sizes.
What's interesting to me is I'm going to take another piece because I still can't figure out mm-hmm. what fruit is coming up for me, but that there's a really clean finish in this bar.
Absolutely.
When you talked about finding the raspberry, was that a flavor that kind of held, or is that something that kind of peaks for you?
So whenever we do tasting with bars, it's really, really important, if you're tasting chocolate, not to be confused with eating chocolate, is to take a piece of that chocolate mm-hmm. and obviously you're going to snap it off. So you want to hear that snap. You want to make sure that that chocolate is in temper, which means that all the cocoa butter is aligned and that it was stored properly and you received it when it was in temper. And this is going to be really important for you to taste it. Past that, you're going to take a piece, place it on your tongue, and rub it back and forth between the roof of your mouth and your tongue. And what you're doing is you're warming up that cocoa butter and you're releasing those aromatics. And this mm-hmm. is how we recommend tasting chocolate, especially to pastry chefs who are looking to impart a new chocolate on their menu. So Manjari is very, very specific. It has that very acidic red fruit note to it. Past that, it's up to the pastry chef to fill that in and say, I would like to pair this with red currants. I would like to pair this with raspberries or strawberries. But it's also very important to taste chocolate like this because you don't want to pair this with something that won't enhance that flavor. So for example, I wouldn't pair this chocolate with pineapple. It would kind of be a little bit too strong and wouldn't work with the flavor profile. And now we have other chocolates that are 64 that have a more open and yeah. flexible flavor profile.
Where a pineapple would be a good pairing, for example.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm getting red fruit, and for me it's almost like a dried cherry that came up, and then it
exactly.
was a fresh cherry, and it was a currant, and it's the presence of vanilla, Can you talk a little bit about using vanilla in chocolate?
Vanilla is almost like the pastry chef's salt. It really enhances flavors. It really brings out those already subtle but very distinct notes within the product. So it's important to have that to kind of round out the flavor profile. And you were mentioning as well that it was very clean and very clean on the finish. For me, that was very important with working with Valrhona. The flavor profiles are very dimensional. They'll start out very intense and then they go into other notes, a lot like drinking wine, but they always have a clean finish on them, on the palate and on the flavor profile.
So now that we've talked about Valrhona chocolate, I want to shift gears a little bit and find out who else you find interesting. What other makers and manufacturers are ones that you enjoy tasting?
I don't necessarily have a favorite chocolate producer, but I do have a favorite origin.
Great.
I love chocolate from the Dominican Republic. So working with Valrhona for many years now, you start to see similar profiles in chocolates. And what I've noticed is that chocolate from the Dominican Republic is much warmer. It has a very roasted flavor. And I've seen this from other producers as well. It just is a great, great open profile chocolate.
Is there any advice that you'd give to up-and-coming chocolate makers or pastry chefs about working in chocolate or with chocolate?
I think chocolate is very daunting. I've met chefs that are at the top of their game, and they look at me and they're like, I don't touch chocolate, I don't understand it. And what I have discovered is that chocolate is actually very forgiving. I would much rather do a chocolate showpiece than a sugar showpiece. And the same goes with tempering chocolate. A lot of chefs are just petrified to work with chocolate. Tempering, if you mess up, you can re-temper again and again and again. And if that fails, you just eat it.
Tempering is scary. When I studied chocolate making, I was like, oh, I'm out. Mm-hmm. Tempering is too much. That's the part that broke me.
When I started working with Valrhona, before I was actually one of their corporate chefs, it was a little scary. And I didn't know how to do it properly. I was kind of just doing what I thought was correct and kind of self-taught. And then when I started working with Valrhona, I really turned it into a relaxing exercise. And I try to pass that on to people. And I remember a chef in school just said, become one with the chocolate. Don't let the chocolate become one with you, as in don't have it all over your chef jacket. And now I absolutely love tempering, and I try to impart that on new chefs and chocolatiers. Really just relax. Relax and be one with the chocolate, and you're going to be fine.
Awesome. Thank you so much for taking this time, Sarah.
Thank you very much.
Podcast listeners, you can learn more about Valrhona on their website, valrhonachocolate.com. That's V-A-L-R-H-O-N-A chocolate.com. Use the code SLOWMELT for a discount on the bar we just tasted. You can also order the Maker Series Tasting Pack, featuring every one of the bars in this Maker Series exclusively through chocolopolis.com. Check our website, theslowmelt.com, for all details, discount information, and the dates of the promotion. To hear shows on what it means to be a professional chocolate taster for iconic confections like M&M's, and to learn more about the deep origins of cacao and chocolate, find our Slow Melt episodes on our website, or look for us on iTunes, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. You can also find us on Twitter and Instagram at The Slow Melt. The Slow Melt Maker Series is mixed and produced by Katie Ranke with guidance from Sean Corey Campbell, and written and edited by me, Simran Sethi, with support from Sasha Woodruff. Our title track, Soldier, is written and performed by The Slackers. Join us week after next for a Maker Series episode featuring ritual chocolate and a tasting session that takes us to Peru. And if you like what you're hearing, please tell your friends, consider giving us a review or a donation, and subscribe through your favorite podcast app. Choco love, and thanks for all your support.